Hello and welcome to the Green Room at Furnitubes. I'm your host, Catherine Barrett, and we're here every month with a new episode. Join us for industry musings, interviews and discussions exploring all things landscape architecture, street furniture and urban design. Hi, I'm joined today by Nivedita Vajjan. Nivedita is Associate Director of Urban Design at Jacobs. And we're here today to have a discussion around urban design and why it needs to be considered much earlier in the planning and design process. We're going to talk about Nivedita's growth and experiences in the design industry, which are varied and full, the impact of great urban design in our communities. And we're going to touch on Nivedita's work with Urban Design London. Hi, Nivedita. Thanks for coming in.
Hello, Catherine. Thanks for having me. Really excited to be here.
Good. We've talked a little bit about your background and it's a really interesting background. So can you tell us a little bit about you and your journey so far?
Sure, definitely. So my design journey, as I said, started as an architect in India. So I trained as an architect. And as much as I loved sort of designing buildings and places around buildings, by the end of that journey, I did realize that I was more interested in young girls' term, life between the buildings, because I love cities and traveling and just to understand what makes places tick and what makes cities really come alive. That's what I was interested in. So I moved to Melbourne to do a master's in urban design and a degree in urban planning at the University of Melbourne. And I spent about 9 years there working and living there, mostly involved with master planning projects, so larger scale master planning, strategic design, which was really, really interesting. But I got to the sort of 9 year mark and I wanted to live in a global city, have more opportunities to travel a bit more widely. So that's what brought me to London in 2012 around. And my first role in London was with the urban design team at Transport for London. And that was quite a shift in my career because I really started understanding the power of good transport-related urban design and how we move people through cities really has an effect in how we shape the cities, where we choose to live, where we choose to work, where we choose to dwell and spend time in, and how you feel in a city. So that sort of kind of got me into transport-related urban design, and that's what I do at Jacobs. I moved there about 6 years ago, and it's been really interesting that work with sort of TfL and Jacobs, because in both the organizations, I got a chance to work not just on the strategic design, but now at Jacobs also from the implementation side. Again, just traveling around the cities in the world, it just gives me an understanding of what good urban design could look like. And that's what I'm most passionate about.
Yes, and you've got lots of different perspectives with education, but also where you've lived as well.
That's
so you've
right.
seen different cities.
Definitely.
So why is urban design so important? And what is good urban design to you?
To me, I think good urban design has the power to create a really strong vision and identity for a city or any urban or rural space. It sort of creates a template from where other professionals can work off it. And I always think urban design sort of works at the intersection of other disciplines like architecture, built form design, urban planning, landscape architecture, engineering, property economics. But it also gives a direction of what the sort of overall template, you know, from which these different professions can then take the implementation side of things ahead on. And I do believe that it has the sort of power to humanize design or humanize engineering by understanding what the people of that place need, what are the sort of, you know, the desire lines, what are the other aspects that make that place tick, steering sort of power to kind of create that template for that space. It also provides this need to shape cities which are more inclusive, safe, and create inspiring spaces, and then work with these different professionals like landscape architects or engineers to see how that vision can be implemented. And I do believe that urban design has the power to also think about larger agendas like biodiversity or healthy streets. How do you create places to meet and gather and just influence the well-being of a city? And I know it all sounds a bit sort of flowery and fluid, but because urban designers can zoom in and out in various scales, I think that really adds a layer to the design process, which I think makes the places better in a certain way.
So what's the topic right now that's hot, that's taking up a lot of your headspace to do with urban design that you feel is really important?
At the moment, especially in the last few months, it's been on my mind a lot, and you know, within our colleagues, about safety on the streets. As a woman who loves sort of walking and traveling and all of that, the things that have been happening recently, the shocking events,
yes,
have really made us sort of step back and think, how safe do we feel in right. a city? But also as designers, how can we actually influence enhancing the perception of safety on the streets?
Right.
And how do we design our streets and public spaces, the built form, in landscape architecture even, the lighting quality, to enhance that feeling of safety on the streets, I think is something that we've been discussing a lot on and trying to sort of, you know, think about how can we make things better, because it is shocking and feels really hard to be stuck in the fearfulness yes. of these events.
Yeah.
But then I think what we are doing at Jacobs is, you know, we're sort of branding it more as sort of fearless streets. How do we create fearless streets where everyone, irrespective of their genders or age or abilities, feels safer in an urban environment?
And what can we do from an urban design perspective to make streets safer?
Going back to understanding urban design as these different scales, from a sort of zooming out scale about the strategy of how do people travel and move through cities,
yep.
but then coming down to the architecture and the landscape architecture and the sort of public realm placemaking level, about how do you enhance the lighting, being able to kind of oversee these spaces, enhancing passive surveillance onto yep. these areas,
yep.
activating the streets.
Yep.
And also just making places that feel welcoming for all abilities.
Yep.
So I think, again, you need to kind of think about the strategic aspect of travel as well as then the local level. How do we influence? And, you know, it might could be the design of the street furniture or the lighting or the yep. landscape architecture.
Yep.
And who's actually looking into these spaces and how do you feel in them?
And it's a setting the objective that we want safer streets, which maybe wasn't an objective 50,
Absolutely.
60 years ago, and taking into account that there are many, many different users of our streets, and it's
That's
not
right.
just one profile. So it's looking at, as you say, age, gender,
yes.
ability.
And yeah. it's about thinking about your city as your clientele, isn't
yes.
it? And that city is made, as you said, of varied people. So thinking of those profiles at the back of the head and keeping it as a second nature, as a designer, thinking about sustainability as well as safety
yep.
as an element, I think really adds an amazing layer to that design process.
Mm. And have you seen increased appetite for welcoming those agendas? Because we all feel that we feel in our profession that they're the right agendas. Have
yeah.
you seen a shift in the last maybe 5 to 10 years in terms of that being welcomed by the other stakeholders in the projects that you're working on?
I definitely do feel so.
Yeah.
I think a lot of our clients and stakeholders have been very proactive, saying that urban design and placemaking should almost come at the, you know, as a key headline in all of the,
yeah.
the objectives that they have. But it's also about educating or sort of working with other professionals. Like, you know, in Jacobs, I work very proactively with a lot of the engineering teams, transport planning teams, because I think urban design, sometimes you don't quite know what it is.
Right.
So it's a bit difficult to explain. So what we do is we try to sort of show that by examples and engage with them early on the process, because what happens is if you take it in later,
yeah.
it's almost an afterthought, and then things are a bit too late to kind of make a real difference.
And the transport's already planned.
Exactly.
Whereas if urban design's in at the beginning, you
exactly.
can influence, actually, let's take into account other agendas before we get the transport locked
in. Definitely, because otherwise you do have this, you know, situation sometimes where, you know, the design teams will bring you in later on and say, oh, can you make this look better?
Right.
And that's not what urban design or landscape architecture is. It's not about making places look pretty.
Yeah.
It's about actually influencing how the places are inclusive, safe, mm-hmm. feasible, and sort of really contribute to the local community.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel from a policy perspective, government policy, that we're seeing the right moves in terms of looking at healthier streets, having more people spend time outside and connecting communities, not necessarily by car, but other forms of connection?
Definitely. I think, you know, I was quite fortunate to work with Transport for London
yeah.
and a lot of their agendas, the funding that they were channeling into local boroughs
yeah.
was targeting active travel, better control on air pollution issues, the whole sort of mental and well-being aspect, because, you know, things like loneliness, for instance, yeah. or the social aspect, especially during COVID, we've realized how important open spaces are and how important cities are. One thing that always strikes me is this thing I learned, you know, read at TF a long time ago, that 80% of all public spaces in London are roads, streets, footways and paths.
Right.
So as soon as you start, exactly, right. or even just that space. Yeah. So if you can imagine 80% of London being almost a template for designers to be able to design the roads, not just as links, but as places. Again, to borrow the UCL study about Link in Place by Professor Peter Jones and Stephen Marshall. It is about thinking about how is a road a place. That's why in some of my work, I've done a lot of work about fun tubes, about sort of how do you create these spaces in a feasible way, about how do we organize the street furniture? How do we organize a space so that it's not an afterthought, but becomes like a node where people can come and gather together effectively?
Why do you think it is a bit of an afterthought potentially? Or is it you see the shift now moving in terms of the space? Or is there still very much the streets are connectors rather than spaces?
In my experience, it has been about the type of teams you work with as well. Even at Jacobs, you know, it has been a process over the last 6 years. And I don't like the word educate, but inform people what is urban design. Mm. So then people or project managers or people who are bringing in the projects actually put that pot right at the start about what does good urban design and landscape architecture do. And I work very closely with the landscape architecture team to make sure that placemaking agenda is very much a part of all of the sort of highways and transport work, especially at Jacobs. It is about having that awareness of what these professions bring to the table. And if that's there, people will engage with us earlier.
And that's really interesting. And it's great that you've got that involvement and you're able to get in at an early stage. I know another thing that we've talked about in the past that's really important for you, for placemaking, it's certainly the subject of some of our podcasts, is sustainability and looking after our precious environment. What does sustainability mean for Jacobs in terms of the approach that it's taking?
Again, I feel very fortunate to work with a company which does take sustainability quite seriously. It's not just a branding talk or a tokenistic talk. In fact, we have a very established business strategy called Plan Beyond, which looks at how does Jacobs, as a really sort of wide scale organization, how does that deal with sustainability at the strategic level? But then it does come down to even at the implementation level. So a lot of our projects, we have to do sustainability plus forms. You know, you have to say, okay, how have you tackled the issue about big agendas like the decarbonization of transport agenda, right up to scheme implementation, the materials we use, of using recycled materials, and actually having them recorded and then tested by the clients. So there's that dialogue with the clients as well, saying we need to look at that. And, you know, this week, our CEO, Steve Demetriou, he's going to be at the COP26 representing Jacobs and what we do from both infrastructure design as well as sort of cities design.
Right.
And that's quite exciting for us, because to have a voice in quite a significant conference, I think because it comes from the top, from a leadership level. Mm-hmm. And again, you see it, it's not tokenistic. You have to actually fill in the forms right to your project level. I think that spectrum empowers people to do that. And that's what organizations like TfL do as well, I think.
I think it's really important that companies that have that ability to influence the direction of a project basically take a stance and say, this is our criteria and we have to meet this criteria. And for us to do this project, this is what it needs to meet.
Yes.
That's how things will be pushed forward. Basically, someone in the process taking a stand and saying, this is what we need to be able to do.
And also because it's something that project managers and designers have to be accountable for, we try to find the opportunities both at the strategic as well as implementation level. Like, again, going back to Furnitubes, we've talked about how, you know, the materiality or the recycled materials, how do we enhance biodiversity through the landscape architecture, all those aspects. And we use a lot of SUDs and sustainable drainage, those kind of things. Again, they seem small, but they all add up.
And you can bring them together in a package that then interlinked to provide a much greater outcome.
Definitely.
Oh, and so your experiences so far have given you a really good overview of stakeholder management. So why do you enjoy kind of leading these processes or leading these stakeholders to come with you on a journey to create great urban design?
I really enjoy the engagement phase of projects because, again, it comes back to why I got into urban design. Mm. In my mind, it's always been about creating better places for people. And us as designers, if you don't have the chance to actually then talk to the people yeah. and say, what do they need? How can we make it happen? And also have that transparency to say, we can do this and we can't do this, and explain why we might have funding issues or stewardship issues or whatever it might be. I always find the exhibitions, or we do a lot of co-design sessions mm-hmm. where we work with smaller stakeholder groups. And often, this is one of my mentors in Australia, you know, something that he put in my head, that the way you can use some Play-Doh to calm an angry mob is fantastic. So, you know, we've had sessions where, like, for instance, we were doing Cycle Enfield, which was quite contentious because we got the bid or the funding because Enfield had a significant issue with diabetes and health issues.
Right.
And this funding was targeted towards creating more cycling and walking to be able to get that health agenda onto the streets. But that did mean that we were reorganizing the parking, we were creating cycle
lanes, yeah.
And that was quite difficult, those sessions. But we had these co-design sessions where we printed out the drawings, but also gave them an opportunity to use Play-Doh and trees and just to say, okay, how would you like to shape it? And some of the public spaces and the designs we came up with actually came, we actually mined the ideas through those sessions. But then working with the engineers to make sure, okay, can we actually have this work? Yeah. Is it feasible or not? Because you need to have that at the back of your mind, because otherwise consultation, making those promises, is pointless. So I enjoy that process of being able to engage and explain to them what the advantages are.
Yeah.
And telling them, why are we doing what we're doing, rather than saying, okay, this is where the cycle lane goes and these are the parking right. lanes that'll get moved.
Right.
So it is a process which I enjoy.
So you're an educator, an enabler. It feels like you're bringing in ideas from the public, but also helping to educate them about what's possible, what's not possible.
Absolutely.
And also translating it for, say, the engineering team about yes. what we need, what can we do,
yes.
and making sure that you produce the best possible
Definitely.
Outcome.
And I think
everybody.
The word empathy comes in yep. into this, because you have the empathy about what your designs, how they're going to change this local area. Mm. And but also have a vision of how it might make it better. But then also think about your team back in the office of yeah. can they do it this or not? So yeah. I think it's, again, urban design works in that sort of layers of understanding.
Yep.
And that's what I enjoy about it.
Yes. Bringing all of your experience together.
Yeah.
That sounds like it's very important to you. And in terms of other engagement, you've spent more and more time in the last few years with Urban Design London. So you're not just working with communities within the Jacobs team and with the different stakeholders. You're also very busy, but you're also finding time to answer your passion for education mm-hmm. and mentoring. And so tell us a little bit about Urban Design London and what you've been doing with Urban Design London and what you love about it.
Sure, definitely. So Urban Design London is a fantastic organization. It's a not-for-profit organization that provides practitioners the sort of tools to make better and more informed decisions to shape the built environment. And what's really interesting about that organization is that they work with practitioners, they work with local authorities, they work with counselors, they've got like a counselor's guide to design, those kind of things, you know. So it empowers people yeah. to understand the language of what design means, because urban design can have a lot of sort of jargons
right.
or things like, you know, you can't quite understand what does that mean in my local area.
Yep.
So that's what I really enjoy about them. And going back to this point you made about education, when I was in Melbourne as well, I was quite fortunate that I got to teach part-time at University of Melbourne and RMIT. And what was nice was that the professors who got me into it wanted me to sort of talk to the sort of students about what's happening in the industry.
Yeah.
But I felt I was also getting stuff from the students of what's happening in the new trends of
right.
how are people thinking about cities. So it's very much a sort of, you know, symbiotic relationship when it comes to being engaged with these
yeah.
kind of platforms. 2020 and 2021, I did the Urban Design London Summer Schools, which was fantastic because, again, it brings in practitioners not just from the UK, but from overseas.
Oh, wow. So because it was online.
It was all online.
Yep.
So last year I had, you know, students from Mauritius and Singapore and talking about their cities.
Right.
And as soon as you start putting these questions of what is good urban design
yep.
in your place, what does it mean to your street, your city, you suddenly see the passion of what that means.
Yep.
And for me, I think that's been the most sort of exciting part for me, to be able to share what we're doing in the industry but also understand the trends from the other side.
Yeah, so you're understanding the challenges that some of these cities or councillors are facing, but also having the opportunity to educate so that by the time it gets to a project, everyone's talking from the same book, basically.
Yep, definitely, yeah, definitely, definitely, yeah.
Nivedita, what made you want to be an urban designer?
My journey started as an architect, but I've always been passionate about cities. My parents used to, always take us around traveling. So even as a child, we traveled a lot. I've always enjoyed people watching, to see how people use spaces, what makes certain streets or places more interesting than others. So I think urban design gives me that ability to go beyond architecture or all of the other sort of disciplines to understand cities in that way.
What is one thing urban designers can do as design professionals right now to help combat the climate disaster?
I think it's about having a real awareness of power that we have as designers to influence sustainable design, because sustainability is such a complex web of issues. But I feel like sometimes we as designers don't realize that we have the power to influence them at a project level, and the projects add up, and then that adds up into what the city looks like and what the country looks like and the world would look like. So I think having that as almost second nature, and having that ability to think about material choices, how do we design the spaces to create more active travel, and thinking about well-being and what that means. And again, going back to the point about it's not just streets or cities as infrastructure, but as places for people. Yep. And I think that makes a difference.
Yes. So using the influence that you have in projects.
Yes.
Totally agree. And if you could put a bench in one spot in the world, where would it be and why?
This is a tricky question because I love so many spots around the world. But I've chosen one, locally relevant one, is in the middle of the Millennium Bridge.
Wow.
Because I find that spot, structurally it might be tricky, but I remember being there, when I first moved to London. That's when you're sort of in the middle of that. You see the, St. Paul's at one end, Tate Modern at the other, you see Tower Bridge, you see Canary Wharf around you, you see London sort of shrouded around you.
Yes.
And you feel like, wow, I'm in the city,
I'm in the centre.
And that for me is quite a special spot.
I love that. That's a lovely place to be. Thank you so much for joining us today, Nivedita.
Thank you so much for having me, Catherine. This was great fun. Thank you.